Hey, this is Rich, and I'm here with Wim. You're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we take a fun, formative look at work and money for the rising professional. Today, we're going to talk about why the minimum credit card payment isn't really the minimum. But first, what's good, good sir?
Well, I'm a little sensitive this week. There's a company who thus far shall go unnamed. This is not a threat, I don't think. I'm going through a J.G. Wentworth situation where they have my money and I want it now. But I'm going to see if I can work that out in the next couple of weeks. And maybe if I work it out, it might be an informative tale for the listeners. So for those of you who are on the timeline, y'all know about this situation. But for those of you who are not, I'm going to keep it close to the heart right now. But it's definitely in the back of my mind.
So from what I already know from the black box discussions, I think it would be a great story for the listeners once there's a happy ending, whenever that comes. Hopefully it does come in the next few days or weeks. Pause.
Oh yeah, there was like at least three pauses and happy endings, and hoping they come soon. But yes, I do hope that it does resolve itself immediately, preferably last week, but it is what it is.
I hope that for you, man. Announcements.
Got a couple 5-star reviews over on iTunes. Enjoyable listening, Garnet Teardrop. I'm sure you're thinking, work and debt discussion, that doesn't sound like fun time at all. I assume that you'll enjoy yourself. Great advice. I assure that you'll enjoy yourself. Thank you. Great advice, great chemistry, and awesome sound quality.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
As captured by those exclamation marks that I hit on there. If y'all wonder why my voice was going up and down there, I'm working on my behind the scenes reading. Maybe I can get picked up. Get on my Morgan Freeman.
Yeah,
it took me a second. I was like, there was a question mark there. And from Dr.
It's common in 2016. He's that voice for all things epic.
Yeah, that is true. He did take off after that little train show that I never got a chance to watch.
Yeah. Anyway,
help me out here. Dr. J. Dup.
Dr. J. Dup.
J. Dup.
Like maybe Jermaine Dupri.
I just found TGOS earlier this year and was excited to hear about this spinoff. These are talks rarely had, but much needed, especially with the insight these two have.
With an exclamation point on the end to bring it all home.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So, of course, appreciate the 5-star reviews. If you're enjoying the show, you should drop by and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Your stars and your words can help us reach more people. And so if you don't know how to leave a review, you can visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. It'll tell you what to do from your desktop or your laptop for iTunes. It'll also tell you what to do for your tablet and presumably your iPhone for iTunes and leaving us a review as well. So again, paychecksandbalances.com/review. And any other announcements before we get into the thick of it? I see it's going to be this type of episode. I tried so hard.
So. I don't believe so. Not for the pre-show.
All right, cool. So size doesn't matter. Just keeping it going.
Main topic, size doesn't matter. Don't let the streets tell you otherwise. So I got like what I'm going to call a real talk opener or disclaimer to this week's conversation. And I realized that for some reason, when present company included, when people are in debt, you get into this mentality that, well, if I can't pay it off immediately, then I won't even bother to pay it off. And I would say that in this week's real talk, mentally prepare yourself to spend, and I would say under optimal circumstances, twice as long to get out of date as you spent getting into date. This is going to be one of those episodes. Spend twice as long getting out of debt as you spent getting into debt. And maybe I was going with date because with all these $200 and $250 rapid dates running around, you might be in debt a lot faster if you go on a lot of dates.
That's the way I was going to try and save it for you. I was ready.
I assume that's what it was. And speaking from personal experience, although I use Vegas here because more people can relate, I think it was an Atlanta trip for me, which I'll talk about in the book that is soon to be coming, the title soon to be announced, but it starts with debt-free. One crazy weekend in Vegas can leave you with 20 years of debt, and I say this from experience.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah, it's crazy how quickly you can get into debt, especially with these instant gratification issues that I think myself and this generation as a whole seems to suffer from. I think there should be a disease assigned for it. It's like
there is, isn't it? No, I'm thinking of affluenza, which was something completely different. Don't let me derail.
I guess brokefluenza or something to that effect. I define that. Yeah, because poor, which I think I've been both at one point and another in my life. I define poor as being unable to afford what you need and broke being unable to afford what you want.
That is an interesting distinction that I'm sure a lot of people have not drawn between the two words.
Yeah, I forgot where I came up with that a few years ago, but just to differentiate between the two, because I don't mean either one offensively, especially given that I can relate to being in both sides, and I'm not even sure I've escaped the latter.
You know what? I was going to say, though, I do notice a lot of people, I see this on Twitter a lot, who talk about how broke they are. But, like, they're clearly working jobs and paying their bills. They just can't ball out and splurge out, which is actually the smart thing to do, because they could go from broke to poor by trying to ball out too much.
Yeah, I mean, when you're broke, you tend to be able to cover all the bills and get all the things that you need covered. You got a roof over your head and things like that. Those, whatever that fancy word is, triangle is met. But you just can't buy bottles. You're like stuck at a bottle, or maybe you have to keep your bottle at home, or maybe you're not even at the VIP or the club and you're seeing everybody update on Instagram and you want to be out there stunting on the gram and going down in the DMs, but you can't do it like that. So I would say that, you know, defining the broke is like defining the middle class, although the two are not related, but they're also not mutually exclusive. Right. It's like, you know, how do you define it? That's just broadly how I would describe it. Poor, you can't afford what you need. Broke, you can't afford what you want.
There it is.
It tends to be a long list of wants, and that's another problem we'll address on another show.
There are, man. There really are, especially when I'm watching with the neighbor driving. But anyway.
Keeping up with the Joneses. So just $10, actually a Chase Bank article that I wanted to highlight kind of going into this. And the article itself, which I'll link to in the show notes, is add $10 a month to pay down debt faster. Not a click-worthy article. It's actually from 2014. So this might have been before click-worthiness was really a thing when those upworthy trends came along. But it is actually a very meaningful article. So whatever that's worth. So from the article, let's assume you have a credit card balance of $2,000 on a credit card with an interest rate of 18%, and the monthly minimum payment is 1% of your current balance plus interest or any late fees. So under this assumption, let's say you're not putting any new charges on the card. Even in that scenario, $2,000 a month, 1% of minimum balance, you would take 182 months to pay off that debt. That's more than 15 years.
Wait, so a balance of $2,000.
That's great.
So, and that's not adding anything else, just with the interest. If you just make the minimum, if you make the minimum payment, it's going to take you 182 months to pay off $2,000.
That is correct, sir.
Damn. 15 years.
You'll pay $2,400 extra dollars in interest alone. So in total, you'll pay a credit card $4,400 just to get rid of an original $2,000 debt.
That sounds really foolish, but I'm sure that that's happened to me. Actually, I know it happened to me as I think about the previous time I got out of debt before quickly going right back in.
You know, this is why the banks are winning. It's really not a competition.
I know. We think that we can come up like, oh, you know, it's cool. I'll pay the minimum for a few months and then I'll start paying more. And I think that's what happens to most people. They say they're going to start paying more, but they never actually start paying more.
And I think also, unlike this very lofty example where it's like, and you don't add to that $2,000 balance, it's really easy to add to it. I can even, you know, using my personal experience, I like to be open and transparent as somebody who speaks about debt. I don't want to come across as I'm just always managing my debt and I just sit around calculating it month to month and I just got it all figured out. And I, you know, that is not the case. And I remember it's almost insane to me that I can continue to repeat the same habits, but Christmas came and I got it in my head that I was going to buy myself something nice for Christmas. And some of y'all know I got a really big, nice thing for Christmas.
Yep.
And then I was going to go Christmas shopping for the family. And I was like, okay, I got a new card. It's 0% interest. I did the math in my head. I'm like, I'm going to charge X, Y, Z over here. I'm going to charge 1, 2, 3 over there. I don't know where it all went wrong. I feel like I didn't carry the one or I didn't account for interest, but thousands of dollars later when the bills all came in February, I was like, who did this? You know, fraud. I was like on the fraud hotline. You know, I was on a hotline bling. I was ready to curse somebody out. And it's crazy how quickly you can dismiss the expenditure of money that you don't physically have in your hand. The illusion of money that credit cards create.
Yeah, I'm imagining you making that call and you hit them up like, someone done spent all this money, and then you're going off and they're just like, sir. And you're just like, yo, this is, I don't understand how this happened. I've been, sir. this is crazy. How do I get these? And they're like, sir, this is all you.
We have the security camera footage. Yeah. Now, on the bright side, I have paid off all those new expenditures, but it was just funny to me how I convinced myself that I could carry this balance and charge it from all these different stores, and I just pay it off the next month. And it took me 3 months. It took me 2 months because we're in March now to pay off that Christmas bills. But I just don't understand how I got it so wrong. And I just think it's that illusion of when you're not paying with cash. And I don't mean debit cards, folks, because that's another illusion as well. But I mean true, actual cash physically coming out of your hand and going into another that creates that actual restraint. It creates their physical restraint where once you run out of money, you are out of money.
Most of the time, I don't have cash on me. I just have my cards. But every now and then, I go to an ATM and I withdraw some cash. I have it in my wallet and I'll feel good about having that same $20 bill in my wallet for a month, but I only use my card.
Have you got caught up in that pending balance illusion, a pending versus available balance?
Nah, tell me more about that.
So I'm definitely going to talk about this on another show, but I found out the hard way that my cell phone, which has my banking institution on it, I won't say the name until they pay me, tells me the available balance, but it doesn't keep track of all those pending not hit yet balances. So I'm looking at my phone like, oh, this is one of those months where I'm balling out. I'm about to make it rain. I'm about to make it sprinkle. They not ready for me in the streets. And then like all these charges hit. And on top of that, as an article I shared on @PayBalances, where you can find us on Twitter, they rearranged when I did the payments by the largest payment. So my largest payment hit first. Now, fortunately, that particular month, I had enough cash to cover them all. But I'm like, that's not how that night went. So I went to store A, store B, balled out at store C, bottles at club D, then ended my night. But when the charges hit, it was club D, most expensive store C, and then all these little minuscule charges throughout the night. And I'm like, yo, like, how can they get away with this? And I Googled it, you know, my good friend Google, which I will plug. And it turns out that they've been doing this for years. And actually, the bank got sued for it, but I think they won.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I remember you talking about this on the timeline a little bit.
They rearrange your balances from largest to greatest in an attempt because overdraft fees is like a, well, it's $1 billion, but also it's a rising revenue stream for the bank. So they organize not your payments by when you made the purchase, by the most expensive payment because they're trying to drain your account so they can hit you for an overdraft fee.
Yo, that's so dirty. Ugh.
And
I want to take a shower.
What I also read in this particular article, which they got specifically sued for, was not only do they arrange the most expensive, they'll try to arrange it so that the most expensive hits so that if you get an overdraft fee, instead of getting one overdraft fee, I don't know why I can't speak today, you get hit with three overdraft fees in that scenario that I was talking about there. So let's say that most expensive charge had drained my account, but happened at last like it did chronologically, since they put it first, then they would also charge me an overdraft fee. Wow. For the next three.
Yo, it is so dirty. Yo, I'm just imagining some scoundrel. So like some Dr. Claw type stuff from Inspector Gadget. There's like somebody sitting with a chair turned a cat in their lap and like talking about how to get more overdraft fees out of people. That's the image I see in my head.
That is an accurate image.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely talk about that on another show. And if you follow us at Pay Balances, I highlight a lot of shows. Well, we, the makers of the show, highlight a lot of future shows, future topics. And if you look in our likes, you can actually find that specific article.
Boom.
So from the Chase article, $10 extra per month. Just by sending an extra $10 for a total minimum payment of $60 instead of $50, you can save yourself 11 years worth of payments. Yes, let me repeat that, folks. Just by adding $10 to your minimum payment balance, you could save 11 years worth of payments. You'd be rid of that debt in 47 months, which is still a lot of time, which is why I said mentally prepare yourself to be in debt twice as long as it took you to get there. Let's say, for example, that little Christmas expenditure I talked about, had I just paid the minimum payment, I could potentially be paying that for the next 47 months because it was fairly close to this little fake story that we're using in this Chase scenario.
Yeah, you know, I just thought about how it could actually take you 10 times longer than it took you to get in if you just have one of those ball out weekends.
Yeah, and I think that's what those exercises where you're just like, those mental exercises where you're like, I'll just pay the minimum. Especially, I think what happened with me and I think happens to folks is, well, it's a 0% interest. It's not gaining any interest. I got other things I want to do. Family wants to take a trip. Kids want toys. I like the PS4, you know, March Madness. I want to drink beer, whatever it is that you're into. And then you just let that 0% interest window lapse, which of course is what they're depending on. And you never step up your payment structure. You're like, you just stay on that minimum schedule. Yo. And I think for some people, not everybody, depending where you fall in that broke, poor, or other category, it's also easy to go, well, it's only $2,000. I'll just pay the minimum until it's paid off. But you're going to end up paying $4,400 in total and interest.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. And, you know, I just thought about something else because this happened to me with one of my cards because I didn't read the fine print as much as I should have and paid the price for that. But they had one of those no interest for one of those zero APR for 12 or 18 month type of setups on it. And if you didn't have that initial, so whatever balance you initially had on during that period, if you didn't pay that off, that interest would then come back at the end of the special.
Oh, retroactive interest.
Yeah. So it's like, hey, it's 0% APR, assuming you pay off all of the purchases that you've accumulated during this period. If by chance you have not paid off the purchases during this period, you will then have to pay on interest for all of the purchases across that period. And even that interest that you weren't paying before, we're still keeping track of it. I found that out the hard way.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, you don't have to reveal all your business, but I know that happens a lot with furniture purchases or like furniture equivalent purchases. So yes, mm-hmm. If you have some furniture that you've purchased and it's 0% interest on an introduction, go read the paperwork because yeah. It's very possible that at the end of that 0% interest window, they're going to charge you the retroactive interest, which is the interest that has been gained on the principal. I don't want to get too difficult in the technical terms, but basically you're going to pay all of the interest, not just the start, what once that 0% interest window ends, you're going to pay everything on top of what you would have paid for the full bill. So you might want to go read that paperwork right now. Pause the show. Go take a look at that and make sure that's not the case in your particular scenario. If you have some furniture or basically anything that you recently bought on a loan or credit card.
Stay woke.
So for some of those listening, they might say, you know what, brother? You know, I appreciate it. You know, it's a great show. I really like what I'm hearing. But I live check to check. Let's find that $10 because I say for most people and as someone who has lived check to check, that is an excuse. I'm not saying it's a valid one or invalid one, but it's an excuse. You can find $10 and I'm about to walk through how. But more importantly, I think part of the problem, again, is the biggest obstacle or hurdle for getting out of debt, like so many other things in our lives, unfortunately, is ourselves.
Yep.
And so what I found is you can make a sacrifice a lot easier if you incentivize doing so. So I read somewhere recently that said for New Year's resolutions, the average person falls off a New Year's resolution within the first 30 days. So with that in mind, and I know getting out of debt was some people's New Year's resolutions, I'm going to ask that you try doing this for 90 days or 180 days or 365 days. And I say that because a lot of people, self included, when I was in debt and getting out of debt, the hardest part, and I've said this before, the easiest part is coming up with a plan. That I can actually come up with that in 5 minutes. The hardest part is sticking to the plan. And I think for some people, if they can know that there's a end goal in mind, especially if that end goal is only 90 days or 180 days, 6 months or 365, 12 months, it gives them a light at the end of the tunnel. It gives you something to strive for instead of just the, I'm going to be under this umbrella of debt until this really long period of time, like the 180, 82 months we talked about earlier when you pay the minimum. So that's what I said. Just try these tips. Let's find $10 and let's apply it for 90 days and let's see what happens. And then let's try it for 180 or 3, 6, 12 months. So this isn't forever. And I'm going to walk through a few of these. These are just some examples that I use in my personal life. And I found some savings and I think people can relate to. And Rich, if you have any, feel free to jump in. If you have any at home that you feel free to write in and you can volunteer those for us. But the first one that comes to mind, because it's usually the easiest, cable.
And I can't imagine.
I've talked about this for several years, but I went 5 to 7 years without cable. And that sounds insane until you do it, because I think I missed it for the first couple months. And then it's just one of those things that you don't think about. And I'll say this because the times you do think about it, I'll be honest, is the weekends. By the time I get off work, and in my case, I hit the gym, I come home, I eat, it's usually 8 or 9. And because I'm washed, I'm usually asleep by 9 or 10. So like this whole Monday through Friday cable watching week was really a waste of money because I didn't even quote unquote use cable because I was asleep.
Maybe this is why I don't go to the gym. You just blew my mind in a way I hadn't thought about before.
Well, you remember that that article we read that said that you actually only have like 24 hours of free time every 7 weeks between sleep, work. I think they did a study that said that you have like 22.7 hours of personal time.
Yeah.
And then you think about all those studies that say people watch 10 hours of TV and 14 hours of internet. And it's like, wait a minute. So I have 37 seconds of personal time. But, you know, whatever the case may be. Basically. So if you can't cut it off, cut back on it. And what I've used right now is I'm working through my Netflix and Chill, our Hulu, our HBO now has its own app. Showtime has its own app. And I think Stars does or is coming out with its own app. So I call it Netflix, Hulu, HBO, Showtime, Stars and Chill. And that will still be cheaper than cable. So I have here potential savings. And you don't have to write these down, folks. I am going to wrap all this up at the end. But I saved about $100 a month when I cut off. Everything is about $200 a month. You can also cut back on your internet when you usually don't have cable. But you might have to keep it pretty high if you're going to get a high subscription program like Netflix or Hulu. So the internet might not change. I get that. So that's $100 right there. I'm just trying to save you 10, folks. I just gave you $100. Feel like an infomercial, but it is what it is. So that's also what I like to do, because I think it's easy for people to forget, is then you, that's a monthly payment, so you've actually saved yourself $1,200 to $2,400 a year.
Yeah, which is eye-opening. And I think one thing that would be helpful, and this, I still have cable, but I'm gonna give this tip anyway because I just thought about it, is to really think about the stations that you actually watch. Now for some people it's going to be those HBO, the Showtimes, the whatever else, but more than likely, there are a few channels that you watch, and that if there's a way to get rid of all of those other channels and keep those ones that you do watch, you could probably still have cable or some version of it and still have significant savings, as opposed to feeling like you need to have 300 to 400 channels. I have so many channels that I don't watch, so many channels that she doesn't watch. But yet we pay for them on a monthly basis when we probably could. You know what? I almost walked out the room to go have a conversation about this. I'm going to let you continue.
Well, you brought up two other points. And the first one would be before I cut it off completely, I used to be a Walking Dead fan. I still am a Walking Dead fan. But as you might imagine, which I don't have cable right now, I'm behind. And I also was able to cut back, and I just called them up and said, what's the cheapest package I can get that includes AMC? So that might be something, a discussion you have. Like, okay, I watch 3 or 4 main shows. What's the cheapest package I have or can get that still will allow me to watch those 3 or 4 main shows? And this is why I also opened with, like, you know, I can't imagine a world without cable. You know, what would I ever do with my life? What would the children do? How will they eat? How will they sleep? That's why I go back to, let's just try to do this for 90 days. I mean, if you cut your cable for 90 days, that's $300 in savings right there. If you cut it for 180 days, that's still $600 in savings. Then it's $1,200 if you do it for the year. Now, some people, if you're under contract, if you cut your cable bill, there might be a fee. But usually that fee, depending on the contract, will be paid off sooner than you would have been paying month to month. And I did this with my cell phone bill, which is what I'm going to talk about next. People go through this exercise where I don't want to pay to cut the cable. I don't want to pay to cut the cell phone bill. And I'm like, well, how much is it cut to cancel? It was $200. I'm like, you're paying $200 a month already. So you're telling me you just have to pay an extra month?
Damn, you made it. Oh, you made that sound so simple.
And then you're at gone. Yeah, you're at $0. So, I mean, look at your contract or call the cable company up or whoever it may be and ask them, you know, if you're unsure, because I wasn't under contract. How much does it cost to cut this? And a lot of times it's like $200. So it's a fee, but you got to look at it like I'm cutting my cable off. So I'm not paying a cancellation fee. I'm paying one more month of cable, period. And then I'm cable free.
What about that security, though? I'm talking about that
security blanket.
No, I'm talking about that security system that Comcast/Time Warner that they get you with, where you try to cancel that. And I only think about that because I know you had quite the painful process. Well, actually, it ended up working out in your favor, if I recall.
I don't want to talk about how that worked out in my favor because I'm still not sure how that worked out, and I'm still waiting to get a $5,000 bill, back due bill. But that being said, yeah, if you have home security, definitely read the fine print on that. But either way, I'd say just have an open and honest conversation with your cable provider and tell them, hey, I'm thinking about canceling. Also, you could just have that conversation. They might cut the bill just out of the fear of you canceling. It's like, as soon as they hear cancel, they come up with all kinds of deals and incentives to keep you. So that might just be another conversation you need to have with your cable company anyway, because they may cut the bill under the threat of you canceling.
Yeah, I think we need to give that a try too. I really want to walk out and have this conversation while it's fresh, because I know once we stop recording, my brain's just going to lose everything, and then it's going to be hundreds and hundreds of dollars later before I revisit this.
Well, and the one thing I was going to end with, as it is specific to cable, is ask yourself, cable havers of the world, it's really easy to justify $200 a month. I mean, you know, for the average person, I mean, the average person right now has cable, but are you getting $2,400 worth of benefit? Are you getting $2,400, your life $2,400 better because of cable? Because that's what you're spending a year. I think that's where people, like, yeah, I can live with $200 a month, but is this making my life $2,400 better? Especially if I have a $2,000 credit bill or loan or something I need to pay off, or emergency that may even come up, because this could be something you could be putting towards your emergency fund, your rainy day fund. I mean, you were already spending $200 a month on cable. Now that's $200 more back in your pocket. As I say from show to show, I really feel that when it comes to debt management, for me, I don't care where you're spending your money. Just, is this the best use of your money? That's $1,200 dates. Like, I don't care where you reallocate the money, but are you getting the $200 12-month-a-year benefit out of this particular service?
Man, you make it sound so logical that to not follow the advice means that you're just being really illogical. So I'm sitting here, I'm like, man, this could be like getting my car paid off sooner. This could be the increase in rent to start banking away from that, should we decide to move somewhere else. Like, it could be so many other things.
And again, why I go back to, it's temporary. I think what people fear is you're not giving up cable forever. You're giving it up for a 3, 6, or 9, 12-month window to make something else in your life better, so that you can enjoy cable free, one credit card free, 12 months from now. And as I've talked to you about before, if you go 12 months without cable, it's easy to go another 12 months without cable. Yeah. The hardest part is going the first 12 seconds without cable.
It's just like going back to the gym.
Yeah. So moving on to some other savings. So I talked about on at Pay Balances on Twitter, the cell phone bill. So I was looking at my cell phone bill provider again. When they pay me, I'll tell you which provider it is. And I realized that I wasn't using all of my data. Well, actually, I had unlimited data. So
you definitely weren't using it all.
Yeah. So I was like, I just had this mental fear that what if I go over? Like, what if I go over? What if I cut back? And I looked at about how much I was using each month. It was around 5 gigabytes, I think
it was. It's a very man thing to do, by the way, is just to assume the worst case. So I do that with everything, and I pay the super premium when I really should have like the most minimum plan. But I'm not going to steal your thunder.
So here's what it was. I looked at it. I was like, hello, let me look at how much I'm using on average. It was about 5 gigabytes. They had a 7 gigabyte plan that was essentially half the cost. And even if I went over, it was $20. So I was paying like, I think, $100 a month. And half that amount was $50 a month, or at least that's the math I'm going to use for this scenario. So that means every month I was paying $50 more to avoid a $20 overage fee.
You're paying $600 a year to avoid spending $20.
Yes.
Oh, the logic.
So I took my butt into the store and I told them to cut me down to the plan. And again, I still live in this month-to-month fear. And this was 2 months ago. I still haven't gone over it. But I'm still in this fear that I'm going to go over $20. But every month that I'm not going over, I'm saving $50. So I've already saved myself $100. So I'm going to use an estimate here. If you save about $50 to $60 a month, that's $720 a year. So $720, if you cut cable, you're at $1,940 already. Almost $2,000 saved just by cutting back on your cell phone bill and your cable bill. And then also walk through a couple other ones. Car insurance. You know, it's actually true. Geico really can save you 15% on car insurance.
Your money.
No plug. So let's say that that's $25 a month. That's $300 a year. Now we're at $2,200 that you just saved yourself. And I had this one probably more for the single people, but I'm going to throw it out there. And I think it's something that's easy to overlook is let's do the inverse of what we all do. Let's move down to a studio on the west side instead of up to the Dulux apartment on the east side. Because I think once you get that raise, once you get that money, once you become a couple, the natural inclination is to move into the two bedroom, two bath, picket fence, house, home, townhouse, villa, whatever is appropriate in your area. And I was talking to a friend. Actually, I'm just going to say I was talking to a family member. I'm not going to say which family member it was because they might listen to this particular show because I do plug this on Facebook from time to time. And they were like, well, yeah, I got this two bedroom apartment because, you know, what if I have a guest? What if I have a guest? And I'm like, OK, well, how often do you have guests? They're like, I don't know, once or twice a year. I'm like, all right. So you're spending $200 to $300 extra a month for a guest that you may or may not have for the year. So you're spending about $3,000 a year. Do you know what kind of hotel you could buy somebody? You could buy somebody an all-inclusive hotel for $3,000. I'm like, yo, move back into a one-bedroom. And I assure you, if somebody comes in and you tell them for that weekend, I'm going to get you a five-star plush resort, valet. Yeah. Like, the money you would save, you could put this person up in a nicer hotel. And I'm not, you know, talking down on your digs, but I'm pretty sure your guest wants to stay in the five-star hotel than the little guest bedroom that you're about to throw them in with the little twin mattress. Like,
I mean, at least get that Airbnb off the room now or something.
I mean, I would say in New York, but I don't know for sure. But I'm pretty sure you can get a decent hotel in most major cities for $300. And yet you're throwing that away each month. And you only have guests a couple times a year. So for those of you who have this empty guest bedroom in an apartment, I'm asking, do you need it? So when that lease comes up, why don't you try 1 year moving down instead of up? And in my real life scenario, we talked about this on another show, my rent increased 40% over 6 years. And my pay increased about 18% during that same 6 year period. So just my cost of living alone, I was spending, I can't do that math in my head, 22% more.
For the same space.
And nothing else changed.
So
I haven't done this myself, but it's just something that clicked recently. I was like, you know, if I had the option again in some of those scenarios, I probably would have moved down instead of up. Like, especially when I'm talking about, some apartments allow 6 month leases. So again, it's going to be the idea of moving down, cutting cable, cut my cell phone. What if I go over?
I'm falling
what if somebody
off.
Visits me? What if they want to watch cable when they get here? Like, do it for 6 months. Do it for 18 months. Do it for 12 months. Just do it for a short period of time. I don't really care how long or short it is. Just, you know, make it happen.
So we've had a second bedroom, but it's played the active role of a home office. So I feel like we're getting value out of it. And it also happens to have a futon should somebody stay.
Well, let me jump in real quick. Do you write it off in taxes?
I tried to, and it was, I'm like, I couldn't. Yep. So what do you think? Are you thinking in terms of like it being like a home office in terms of how I use it for outside of work?
Yes. Because I say that would have been a slightly different scenario if it paid for or it was a cost cutting scenario for itself where, you know, you get a tax benefit.
Yeah. It was something like the percent of time I use it isn't enough. And I mean, I probably could have pulled that swindle, but then if I ever caught that audit, I'd be screwed. So I'm just like, you know what? I'll play it safe. I'll go with what the TurboTax is telling me, which is you ain't getting nothing for it because you're not using it enough for that purpose. And it's also not big enough to be considered, you know, a an office in a way that can be written off. So pay up, partner. Cool. That's pretty much what I got for it. I tried though. Anyway.
No, you had something to say. I actually interrupted you.
Oh, well, whatever I had to say is completely gone now. It's like it's floating away toward the clouds with a balloon that's randomly
in the
sky. That's
my fault. That's my fault. Because you were talking about how the studio apartment serves a different purpose in your case. And that's what I'm not advocating for. I don't want people to hear, oh, you know, Wim is talking about moving down. He wants me to live in a box just so I can get a debt. That is actually not the case. I'm saying if you have a room in your apartment, not your home or whatever facility or place you rent, and you haven't used it and someone hasn't occupied it in 12 months, what I am saying is you just wasted 12 months or however much it costs to pay for that space. And you can feel however you want to feel about that. But if you have somebody living there or physically occupying it on a frequent basis, then that's a slightly different scenario.
Oh, I saw it. So this probably isn't what I was going to say, but I was thinking about this earlier and didn't write it down. Let me just hurry up and say it before I lose it. And that's that mental hurdle of when you move into a smaller space, it feels like you're taking a step back in the short term. Like it's just naturally a mental hurdle, like less space. You know, maybe that one person who comes to visit sees you in the big space and you're worried when they come to visit 12 months later, you're in a smaller space. That one person is going to think that you're really struggling in life. Like, but you're really not. You're actually being smarter in the short term to benefit more in the longer term.
Yes. And I have several thoughts on that, but I'll share at least two. Number one, if you want to get to the same place as everyone else, then you should do exactly what everyone else is doing. But if you want to arrive at a different scenario or place, then yes, you have to do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. That is what differentiates people. And then number two kind of goes back to it's temporary. So all you got to do is, I don't know, Instagram less. Like, I don't know how people think these people are going to find out. Like, you don't have to put on Facebook that you're moving down to the lower, smaller studio apartment. Like, you don't have to tweet about the sacrifices you're about to make. And actually, I would advise that you didn't. Why don't you just celebrate? Y'all know I don't celebrate goals. I celebrate accomplishments. I got all kinds of goals. I got 1,000 goals, but I usually celebrate once I've crossed the finish line. So those people are going to be more interested when you're like, hey, I'm debt free versus, hey, I moved down to a smaller apartment. Because they're not. Yeah, you're right. They might judge that. They might retweet, make a joke, and you're going to feel some type of way about that. But when they're $3,600 wasted on rent, cable, and whatever else, and you're debt free, I don't think they're going to be making the joke. I don't think you're going to be the butt of that joke.
Yeah. I'm imagining some type of started from the top meme that someone tries to throw at him, and it's like, yeah, but you still have like $22,000 in credit card debt, and I am debt free. So who's the real winner here, buddy? I mean, that might be a jerk move to say something of that nature,
hey,
but you can at least
think it. Like I said, I'm not against the humble brag or the passive jab. Like, hey, yo, if you earn it and you do big, like, I don't think you have to brag because the actions speak for themselves. Like, put it out there. But I'm just saying you don't always have to share the journey. Just share the victory.
Yeah, that's what everyone else does on Facebook anyway. The highlight reel. Do the same. Done.
And then I'm going to wrap up here. Is if all of these didn't help you, and we're at about $285 if you took all of these, that's a total year savings of $3,420. And again, that's on the lower side. That I didn't do a range. That's if you did the minimum and followed all these, you would save $3,400 a year, which means if we said the same above scenario, you would pay off that $2,000 debt at 15% interest in 8 months versus 182 months, and you would pay $98 in interest versus $2,400 in interest. So in 8 months, you could save yourself $2,334 in lifetime interest. I don't know. It just seems like a pretty good deal to me. It's an 8-month sacrifice to pay off this particular made up credit card, but I'm sure it's a scenario a lot of people can relate to. And if you can't find something that you're doing right now that costs $10 a month and stop doing it and put it toward your minimum payment.
It's also okay to acknowledge that you're mentally weak. Because I'm sitting here and I'm like, 8 months, you think about the grand scheme of like life and things in general. And what you're saying, that idea of it being temporary, to not be able to sacrifice for that amount of time. And maybe, and it's like what you're saying, maybe you start with that 10, you got to build up the strength to be able to make the bigger sacrifices later on. Cause you're making it sound really logical and really reasonable, but there are a lot of people who are still going to be like, but bruh, that weekly cheesesteak, man. Like there's going to always be that thing.
Well, I'm actually glad you said that because that's how I'm going to wrap up with. I'm also going to plug two free sources. So if you want to understand how I came up with these numbers, I'm going to put one in the show notes. One, 90 to 95% of us have access to right now, and that's Excel. If you go into Excel, there's a loan amortization template. If you go to new, now depending on which version you're in, this might be a little bit different, but I'm sure you can Google it, how to find it. Go to new, go to templates and search for loan amortization schedule. And that allows you to do exactly what I've done here for yourselves, where you can plug in a number of different scenarios, and you can plug in how long it'll take to pay off. You can plug in if you added X amount of money. So you can use that. And I am not getting paid by them, but I am a big fan of bankrate.com, and I use their credit card calculator. And that allows you to do two different scenarios where you can plug in the month that you want to be out of debt, or you can plug in the extra amount of money that you're going to put towards your debt, and it will tell you either how much you need to spend or it'll tell you when you will be debt free.
I'm trying to look here and see if there is something in Google Sheets, because I realized that there's also an increasing number of people who are moving away from Excel. And I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure somewhere in here there is a template. I'm going to let you keep going, but I'm going to try to find this in the meanwhile.
So for the wrap up, or the pre-wrap up, size doesn't matter. When it comes to debt payment, something is better than nothing, and something over the minimum is always better than anything. Review your budget today. Find $10. I believe in you. I know you can find it. Most people fall off in the first 90 days. I challenge you to stay faithful to whatever plan you come up with for at least 90 days. And this is what I was going to talk about earlier, to your point, on a future podcast, maybe even it won't be the next podcast, might be the podcast after that, I'll discuss how you can involve incentives in your own debt payment plan. And I call that a debt payment strategy with built-in rewards that you can give yourself every 90, 180, 360, whatever you want to put it in, to make your debt journey slightly less than miserable. The ends justify the means. The end is always a happy ending, but that journey is hard. And I emphasize that because I think that's important. I think it's really key to getting out of debt is to, I don't like these glossy articles that say, oh, we got out of debt in 15 minutes and all we did was smile and hold hands. And it's them like jumping into a rainbow with unicorns in the background. I'm like, yo, that's what it was not like for me. It was horrible. It was sad. I wasn't on the gram because I didn't want to let people know that I was in on a Friday night when everyone's turning up. But once I got to the end of the journey, it made it all worth it. And I think that's very important. Like, it's difficult. It's not easy. But it is worth it.
It is. And I've been looking, and I ended up having to use the powers of Google to find. I just basically typed in Google Sheet templates, and it took me to a whole page filled with templates for different things. So it's broken down by categories again. And we can put this in the show notes too. If you search Google Sheets templates in Google, or probably whatever engine of choice, it'll take you somewhere. It'll, especially if you already have Google open as an email. And so I see options for albums and flipbooks, okay, calculators, calendars, personal finance specifically, resumes and cover letters, statistics. It looks like there's a little bit of something for everyone in here. That's all I got.
That's all I got as well.
All right. Cool, man. So, yeah, want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances. And as we mentioned up front, if you're enjoying the show or you're getting value from it, don't forget to drop by on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. If you don't know how to do that, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review, where you'll get those instructions both for your iPad, your iPhone, your whatever device that you hold in your hand, or if you have a desktop or laptop computer, which you're accessing iTunes from. So anything else before we, well, I'm guessing probably not, because you just said you're good to go, that you probably don't have anything else to add.
The only thing I have is, let me know, folks that have tried to get out of debt and struggled, failed, or succeeded, what was the most difficult challenge? I want to make sure that I'm speaking to that. I think I have it in mind because I've done it myself, but if I didn't cover something that, oh, he forgot, please write it.
Yeah, definitely do. And you can send that email to info@paychecksandbalances.com. paychecksandbalances.com. You can also use feedback at paychecksandbalances.com. Whichever makes you content, it'll get to the same place. We look forward to hearing from you on this. And of course, if you want to interact with us from the show account on Twitter, at paybalances. So yeah, again, thanks for listening. Until next week. And actually, we may or may not be on next week. We'll see about that. I'm supposed to be in Texas for WrestleMania, and we were supposed to talk about this before we recorded, but I don't want to leave the people hanging. So it's possible that we may not be on, but if you're on our email list, you'll know for sure. Look at that, an opportunity to plug. So if you go to paychecksandbalances.com/email, you sign up for our email list where you'll get exclusive updates about show happenings, other digital guides or info that we're putting out there. If we find good stories that we want to share with those who follow us there, it's easy to get all of that stuff by signing up for our email list. So I think that's enough plugs for me. Hope everyone has a great week or next 2 weeks, whichever it ends up being. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.